The title of the talk is Musings. And the definition of musings is absorbed in thought. It's meditative, contemplation, reflection. And this is one of those talks where it doesn't really warrant a whole hour, 45 minutes. It can be said in just a few minutes and then move on to the next subject. So these are just thoughts that kind of run through my mind, things that I see around me in the world, particularly among the brethren, and just need to get it off my chest. All right. How many brethren here are on Facebook? Come on, don't be shy, admit it, I'm on Facebook. You know, it's one way for me to keep in touch with relatives, cousins that I haven't seen in 30 years. You know, as a result of Facebook, we had our first cousins reunion on my mother's side for the first time. Cousins I hadn't seen in 35 years, so it was kind of nice to get together and, you know, reconnect. And of course, you have all the brethren that are on Facebook and you get to see what they're up to. And if there's one thing I learned about Facebook and about the brethren, and believe me, you learn a lot about people on Facebook, is just how political the brethren can be. Constantly discussing politics. And not so much for political reasons or for prophetic reasons. It isn't so much that they're sharing a link to a page and go, look what's going on here. Isn't this what the pastor says? Or isn't this what the prophet Daniel says? Or isn't this what John says in Revelation? No, it's for the most part just whining and complaining about the authorities, the political authorities in the world today. What Mr. Obama is doing, or what this governor, or that mayor is doing in their town, and how the property is going up, and the, you know, taxes and this, and you know, it's just one complaint after another. They're grieving over the decisions that the politicians of this world are making. And you wonder if this isn't so much a lack of faith in God's promises. I mean, brethren, this is what we're looking for. We're looking for this system of things, this world, to just go completely under. Why are we trying to build it up? Why are we trying to save it? You know, in some countries, it is mandatory for you to vote. I believe in Australia, it's mandatory. If you don't vote, you get a fine. And for those who can't afford to have any money taken out of their pockets, you know, they would have to go to vote. And I think that if that's the case, then if it's like here in the United States and the other free countries, so-called free countries, where you go to the voting booth and they'll go politician A, politician B, or fill in your own suggestion, your own candidate. And I think if that's the case, then I wouldn't have any problem going to the line, the voting line, and going into that booth and just writing in Jesus. Because when we all consecrated, that is who we chose to be our leader, our king, our president, whatever you want to call. I had a brother email me a while back. I won't mention names or locations, but he was a bit concerned because, and he wanted to know what my opinion was, because he was telling me about a brother in his area that was actually running for office. And I think the brother won the office. So not only are we have brethren talking about politics, we have brethren who actually vote. I know brethren who have admitted to me that they actually vote, that they feel that it is their duty to vote. Now we have brethren who are actually running for office. It kind of reminds me, it's taken out of context, but remember in 1 Corinthians, there were these brethren who were saying that the rain had begun. And Paul says, you know, I wish the rain had begun. I wish you had told me. I wish I can rain with you. It just seems that there are certain brethren who are wanting to fix this world now, ahead of the Lord and its due date. But we have to wait on the Lord. And it's just a lack of faith, and you wonder where these brethren's trust is in. Okay, moving on. Enough of politics. Reconciliation. Let's talk about reconciliation. The definition is, I love these definitions, an act of reconciling, or the state of being reconciled. Well, what does reconciled mean? Well, it means to bring into agreement or harmony. You know, there are many ifs in the Bible. That's IF. If. But I think that the most misunderstood if that I have ever found is found in Matthew. Matthew 18. I'm sure you all know what that is. Matthew 18:15. If your brother sins against you, go and tell him his fault between you and him alone. If he hears you, you have gained your brother. But if he will not hear, take with you one or two more, that by the mouth of two or three witnesses every word may be established. And if he refuses to hear them, tell it to the church. But if he refuses even to hear the church, let him be to you like a heathen and a tax collector. Simple instructions, right? If you have an issue with one of the brethren, what do? Do you go evil speak to others about it? No. You approach that brother or sister and you discuss it. If I do something to stumble you, guess what? You talk to me. You don't go talking to brothers Tom, Dick, or Harry, because that is evil speaking. And I've had a lot of experience with evil speaking. And evil speaking is a subject all its own. And, you know, when it comes to evil speaking, there's this fine line. Give you an example. Yesterday I gave a talk. Involved a brother, Robert Carnegie, regarding a talk that he had given. Now, if I was praising the talk, there'd be no problem. I don't think you brethren would accuse me of putting him on a pedestal and say, look, great talk, he's a great brother. But the fact that I criticize his talk, some are saying that's evil speaking. You can't have it both ways. You know, I was not criticizing the messenger, I was criticizing his message. And we all do that. Every time we hear a talk at a convention, what do? During the intermission or during the mealtime, we sit around and we discuss it, whether we agree or don't agree with it. It doesn't mean we're evil speaking about the person, we're just talking about the content of the talk and the material. So there's that fine line that we need to be aware of. Sometimes you have to deal with a Matthew 18, and there are times when it doesn't always work out the way you expect. And I'm just trying to get my notes here. There we go. And I've had personal experiences where brethren will approach me about something, and something they heard. And then when you try to do a Matthew 18 and involve them, they go, "Well, I don't want to get involved." You know, I'm sorry, but you're already involved. You approached me, so now you're involved. Or one time I had someone email me, and it was kind of like, kind of reminded me of the serpent in the Garden of Eden. When he goes to Eve and he goes, "Is it true?" And I goes, "What true?" And he goes on to explain, "I heard from someone that you said so and so and so and so." And I said, "Well, you know, that's not true. That's not what I said. That's not what I meant. But I appreciate you doing the Matthew 18 to, you know, investigate the matter. Now I need you to do me a favor. I need you to tell me who this person was so that I can Matthew 18 them and settle the matter. It's none of your business." That's what I was told. "Well, I'm sorry, it is my business. It concerns me." Or they'll say, "Well, it's not important." "Well, it's not important. Why are you evil speaking?" I find at times that brethren get offended things that they shouldn't even be concerned about, and things that don't concern them. If what I do is not a crime, if it's not a sin, and you still get riled up over it, then the issue is not about me. Guess who the issue lies with? It lies with you. Yet there are those who feel the need to gossip and evil speak. So not only are they gossiping and evil speaking, but they're also busybodies, which of course the scriptures speak against. If we look at 1 Timothy 5:13, I'm going to read from the New World Translation because I like the way it renders it. It reads, "At the same time, they also learn to be unoccupied, gadding about to the houses, yes, not only unoccupied, but also gossipers and meddlers in other people's affairs, talking of things they ought not." And then 1 Thessalonians 4:11 tells us, "To make it your aim to live quietly and to mind your business." Mind your own business. If it's not your business, brethren, do not concern yourselves. Unless, of course, it's affecting the ecclesia. Then it's your duty to speak up. Only after you investigate whether it's true or not. Just don't be a busybody going about it. Again, that's where that fine line is drawn. When is it being a Matthew 18 and when is it being a busybody? Now, I'll give you a little example of being offended. And I'll give you my own personal experience that involved me. I'll fill you in on a little secret, brethren. eBay. That's right. You name it, I've sold it. Or I bought it. Well, maybe most of the stuff I buy and sell. And if you want to know, my account is RR144. If you want to kind of be nosy and look up to see what Brother Orlando's up to on eBay, you can look that up. Because apparently some like to do that. I have a very vast library of books. There's about 6,000 books in my library. I have comic books from my youth that if I sold, I could retire. I have my old Jehovah's Witness books because, well, Jehovah's Witnesses love to publish. I have a lot of Bible student books. I have a lot of old Adventist books, and I have books by people who influenced the pastor. Books by Miller and Storrs and Barber and Patton and others. People you probably never even heard of. I have a lot of the literature that were put out by the various splinters after Pastor Russell died. back around 1995, I was asked to be a part of a historical committee that was doing a history on the pastor and of the Bible Students Association. And I spent thousands of my own dollars buying these books that many actually sat on the shelves of the brethren who, for whatever reason, would not share them with me. And that's fine. You know, and yet when brethren call or email me and ask me for something in my library, I don't hesitate to share it. And I certainly don't ask for credit when I give it to them. And let them know, don't forget where you got that from. I've had brethren who have made documents and made a PDF of it, and they'll put a watermark over it, property of so-and-so. You know, I don't know why. There are certain brethren out there who think that they have a monopoly on the truth, that they own everything Pastor Russell. But let's get back to eBay. Brethren take exception to my eBay. I didn't know that until someone told me. And apparently someone for years was evil speaking about, you know, Brother Orlando's eBay. And, you know, if you were offended, you should have approached me. I don't know why that would offend you. You know, these are the same brethren that say, you know what? It's your property. You can do whatever you want with it. Okay, so what's the problem? I don't approve. Well, I'm sorry. But, yeah, I will. Sometimes I have too much stuff in my library, and I will eBay it. I will eBay some of my old truth literature, some of my Jehovah's Witness books, you know, whatever I can. I've had JWs threaten me because I've sold things that were not for the public, sentenced me to second death, as if they had a hotline to God where he could just remove my name from the Book of Life. I will let you know that I do have a website, and it costs me thousands of dollars a year to upkeep with the domain names and the server fees and the bandwidth and the downloads. And you know what? eBay helps to pay for that because I can't afford to do it on my own salary. I'm also registered in the state of New Jersey as Bible Student Ministries. So I'm not a nonprofit organization. It's just Brother Rolando doing business as so-and-so. And guess what? I have to pay taxes for everything I offer on the website. So that helps offset that. Not everything I sell is mine. I have sold for various brethren. Brethren you know, and brethren you don't need to know because, well, it's none of your business. But I have sold countless sets of reprints. Hundreds of dollars. It goes for a lot of money. I have sold volumes and all the truth literature. Not because these brethren were in dire need of money. I know for a fact that the money was donated to various ministries and ecclesias. The money received for selling old, moldy reprints and volumes went to purchase new sets. You sell a nice set of reprints, an original set of reprints, you get $500. Guess what? And you want to give them to the brethren? That's just one set. Now you sell it for $500. You send that $500 to Chicago, you can get yourself five new fresh sets. Now you've got five sets that you can send to the brethren. Or sell old volumes and buy a dozen sets from New Brunswick or wherever and send them to the brethren. And that's what happened. These sets went out to a brethren overseas, to India and Africa and other places. One brother that was downsizing from a house to an apartment had me get rid of all his stuff. He didn't need it. I got rid of it. I gave him the check after I sold everything. He signed it on the back and he put it in the contribution box. It's a lot of money. But you don't know that, do you? When you only know half the truth or half the story, your imagination gets the best of you. That's Brother Rolando profiting off the truth. When a simple Matthew 18 is all they would have taken. Okay, let's see here. What did I do with that? There we go. All right. Let's talk about unity. That seems to be the buzzword among the brethren. You know, all around the world, there's a common concern, a legitimate concern, among the Lord's people. Why can't we be unified? Some ask. Why can't we just speak the same language? We should walk together as one. And some express concern regarding the differences in beliefs and practices we feel are important. Why can't we put our differences aside and agree to disagree? And, you know, these are relevant questions. Unfortunately, there's no easy answer. Things aren't always in black and white. Some like to be told what to do and how to do it. Why? I don't know, because maybe it frees them from any kind of responsibility. And there are those who believe that there will never be any unity among us, at least not on this side of the veil. And there are all sorts of beliefs and attitudes and principles among us. There is a movement within the association wishing to reform the Bible students. They want to reform doctrine, the chronology, the prophecy, presence, covenants. They want to either rewrite the volumes or just discard the volumes altogether. And apparently these reformers are the good guys, because they extend love to all. They're accepting of all the brethren, regardless of what they believe. And this proves that, well, that they practice true Christian love. That's evident of those they invite to serve at their conventions. Now, it's true that according to 1 Peter 4:8, love covers a multitude of sins. But love is not an excuse to turn a blind eye to the errors around us. There's a new generation of Bible students who really don't know the deep things of God. I have met elders who have privately admitted to me that they have never read the volumes cover to cover. And yet they're leading volume studies. I've heard it said that on a number of occasions that, I think this is the way it goes, we agree on 95% of things, but spend 100% of our time debating the 5% we disagree with. I think the percentage is much, much higher. And I've been told that we need to focus on what we have in common, not on what we disagree on. This harvest message, which, well, apparently doesn't exist, creates more harm than good. It separates. It causes divisions. And so instead of starting a new movement, instead of them just going off to start a new movement of their own, they want to reform the old one and move forward. Let's reorganize under this one umbrella. So instead of being a fragmented group here and there, we can all point to a name and say, hey, I'm with them. I guess that would work. We could rally around a particular publishing house. We could distribute their literature. We can focus on a particular doctrine, you know, something unique. It certainly worked for the Jehovah's Witnesses. I mean, they have that whole thing on having God's visible organization. They would also fall under the category of these sacred name groups who believe that, well, God has a name and you have to use it. Unfortunately, all these groups can't decide on what the proper name of God is. And then you have groups like the Seventh-day Adventists and the various offshoots of the Armstrongs, the old Worldwide Church of God, who say that we have the truth because we observe the Sabbath and all the holy days. That's a true sign of the true faith, the true religion. You know, we could do that. We could focus on the kingdom, the ransom for all. We can convince people that we're right and all others are wrong. That we're the only ones who teach this. You know, it will increase our memberships. It will fill these seats. After all, the kingdom isn't here. And 2043 is a long ways off. We can be like everyone else if we organize, if we had that gimmick. The majority of the brethren are tired, and they're growing weary. I was told we're dying. Jehovah's Witness friend of mine told me, you guys are dying. You're just nothing. We're in the millions. Look at you. And I thought, brethren, said, look at us. We're just dwindling away to nothing. But isn't that what we're waiting for? If we were increasing, we'd be in trouble. But we're dying. And that's the way it should be. But many of us are tired of being different. And they're complaining as they look around us. Where is this promised presence of His? You know, from the day of our forefathers fell asleep in death, all things continue exactly as from creation's beginning. 2 Peter 3:4. He ain't here. Let's just throw it all out. Let's start from scratch. Let's reorganize. You know, that kind of reminds me of the Israelites. You know, the Israelites, like the church, were sanctified. They were set apart for a purpose. They were God's chosen people. But it got to a point that they were tired of being different. They wanted to be like everyone else. You know, I heard a talk some years ago from the platform where it was suggested that, you know, we could form our own Jerusalem Council, you know, like in the Book of Acts, kind of like a governing body. We get these elders from the different groups, put them together, and they can decide. They can reconcile and debate the doctrines that we disagree with, and then put together a statement of faith. This is what we're going to believe. These are the essential doctrines. There's a problem with that. When we elect men to do our thinking. You remember in 1 Samuel chapter 8, They were tired. And the elders went up to Samuel. In verse 5, and they said, look, you're old. Your sons, they don't walk in your ways. Now make us a king to judge us like all the nations. And so we have this new generation telling us, you guys, you're old school, you need to step aside, let us come in so we can infuse some new blood into this movement and move forward. Well, Samuel went to the Lord and told him. He says, you know, this is what they want. And as a result, God says, okay, this is what you need to tell them. And he tells them in verses 9 through 17, he tells them all the things that are going to happen as a result of them wanting to be like everyone else. About the property, the taxes, their children, and the works. Okay. There are sacrifices. Okay, so you want a Jerusalem Council? You want a governing body dictating to you? We're going to discontinue the volumes and just read the Bible because, well, after all, we are just Bible students, so we should be reading the Bible. No more harvest message, no presence, no covenants, no Israel. All that stuff does nothing but divide us. Let's just focus on love and the little milky stuff, you know. Trinity, no hellfire, no immortal soul. Preaching the kingdom. In verse 19 of 1 Samuel, Samuel goes out to the people and he tells them, what's going to happen? He says, you know what? And you cry out in that day because of your king whom you have chosen for yourselves, and the Lord will not hear you in that day. That's what happened when we tried to heap upon ourselves leaders to do our thinking for us. And what did the people say? Doesn't matter. As long as we have a king, we don't care. And brethren today are saying, that's fine. We're willing to make those sacrifices for the sake of unity. Going back to verse 7. This is what God told Samuel. And the Lord said to Samuel, heed the voice of the people in all that they say to you. For they have not rejected you, but they have rejected me, that I should not reign over them. So this is what happens. As a result of our actions, we unsanctify ourselves. We lose Christ as our king and our head because we put others in charge. We let them dictate to us what should be the truth and what shouldn't be the truth. We compromise for the sake of unity. Now, I know some of you are probably saying, it's kind of extreme, don't you think? You know, George Bernard Shaw wrote, the only thing we learn from history is that we learn nothing from history. History repeats itself, and we never seem to see it. The adversary uses the same tactics over and over again. It just packages it a little differently. One day he puts a yellow bow, the other day he puts a red bow. And we keep falling for it. It happened after the apostles fell asleep in death. Go to Acts 20. Starting with verse 29. Paul here writes to the brethren. He says, I think this is Paul. Yeah. He says, for I know this. Yeah. For I know this, that after my departure, savage wolves will come in among you, not sparing the flock. And from among yourselves, men will rise up speaking perverse things to draw away the disciples after themselves. Therefore, watch and remember that for 3 years, I did not cease to warn everyone night and day with tears. So, the apostles fall asleep. These men rise up. They take over. The so-called learned men. And as a result, a second Babylon is formed. It happened after the pastor changed. By change, I mean on the other side of the veil. He too warned the brethren towards the last few years of his life about the wolves in sheep's clothing, as brethren would write to him, letting him know about what was happening in their neck of the woods. And Brother Russell traveled all over. And he would meet some of these individuals. You know, you hear the story of the one elder who told him, "I'm the chief elder here." And Brother Russell kind of walks around them and he says, "I've never seen a chief elder before." Brother Russell warned the brethren, letting them know that this is your ecclesia. You appointed these men to their positions. You can take them out. Do not let the elders run away with the meetings. But after he died, you know, it took 200 years for the church after the apostles to go from what it was to become the papacy, or the second Babylon. It only took 2 years after the pastor passed away. And as a result, what did we have? We had a third Babylon that fashioned itself after the second. Well, Brother Russell's gone. Now what do we do? And what did the brethren do? They immediately reorganize. We need structure. We need to continue the work of that servant. Not realizing, at least in my opinion, that that servant's work ended when his life ended. But that didn't stop them from trying and falling into the same trap. And as a result, a fourth Babylon was formed. And yet the call is still as relevant today as it was then. Get out of her, my people. We can see and we can feel this tone, this it's in the air, brother. I really can't explain it. The winds of change are here, and there's this really ugly smell. It's the best I can describe it. Few are holding on to the truth as given to us by that servant. Few. We are the John class. And unfortunately, this is our Patmos. I think that when the kingdom is fully established, I think there's going to be a lot of surprise people, a lot of surprise brethren. From the Jehovah's Witnesses who thought that they would be the only ones there, down to those who answered the call when there was no one knocking, or running a race that they were never really invited to run. And that adds up to many of the problems we see today. When we lower our standards, when we lower his standards, that adds up to many of the problems we see today. And so, every one of us needs to re-evaluate our standing with the Lord. And not be ashamed of being alone. Not be ashamed of being different. Being ridiculed. When those who profess to be our brethren call us Russellites or volume students, or when they mock us for holding on to beliefs that they themselves just can't grasp. Looks like I'm going to finish early, brethren. I have some scriptures in closing. Revelation 3:11. Behold, I come quickly. Hold that fast which thou hast, that no man take thy crown. So the Lord himself says, you know, I'm coming quickly. Hold on to it. And make sure no one takes it away from you. In James chapter 1 verse 12. He says, blessed is the man that endureth temptation. For when he is tried, he shall receive the crown of life, which the Lord hath promised to them that love him. Do you love the Lord? You should. Because as a result of our love for the Lord, as a result of our love for the truth, a truth that is becoming more and more unpopular among those who claim to uphold it, it becomes very, very difficult for us. It's a temptation for us to compromise who we are just for the sake of a little unity. But James says when he's tried and he proves faithful, he goes through all the temptation, he comes out fine, the Lord will bless him. The Lord promised you a crown, you were faithful, you will receive it. 1 Peter 5:4. And when the chief shepherd shall appear, ye shall receive a crown of glory that fadeth not away. That's what we're waiting for, brethren. If we're faithful. Which brings us to our last scripture. One that we see at many of the conventions. Revelation 2:10. Be thou faithful unto death, and I will give you a crown of life. Be thou faithful unto death, and I will give you a crown of life. That is our goal, brother, to be faithful unto death, to hold on to whatever it is that the Lord sees fit to put us through. We knew what we were getting ourselves into when we made that consecration. You know, our Lord gives the example of counting the cost when he says, well, who doesn't count the cost when they're building a house? I mean, you just don't build a house and then realize you're out of material. No, you got to sit down and you got to figure out how much it's going to cost, what do I need, make the plans, and you do it. I don't think any one of us just willy-nilly just jumped into consecration because we thought it would be a cool idea to do. But after learning the plan, we came to love our Heavenly Father because of this plan. And we realized that I want to be a part of this. And we expressed our desire to the Lord, and He opened the door and let us in. Not before he says, are you sure that this is what you want to do? Because it's not an easy road to take. It's a narrow, cramped road. Sometimes I look at that road and I think about how I look at the side of a mountain. Sometimes they carve these roads on the side of a mountain and it's so narrow. And there's no banister to keep the car from going off the cliff, you know. And sometimes you can walk two by two. You're walking with your buddy, your brother, your sister with you, walking together in your consecrated walk. And then there are times when the road gets too cramped and there's only enough room for you to walk on. It gets so cramped that sometimes you're hugging the side of the mountain and your toes are over the edge. And sometimes you have to step on pebbles and rocks and climb over things. Those are the trials that we have to go through in our service to the Lord. Not only in our service to the Lord, but our service to the brethren, to each other, in protecting the truth, in upholding the truth. Truth doesn't change. It's constant. What was truth yesterday is still truth today. And so we need to continue along that road. We counted the course. We told the Lord, yeah, this is what I want, whatever the cost. Sometimes we have to be careful what we wish for when we tell the Lord that. Whatever it takes, Lord, just keep me close to you. Because who remember that? And he will put you through the fire. I can remember a lot of instances when I first started out, a lot of the trials that he put me through. And yet he always took care of me. I can remember when Sister Marilyn and I were kicked out of my mother-in-law's house because we were apostate. And she told us, I want you out. I want you out now. And she says, I don't even want you living in the same area. I don't want to smell your apostate stench. Those were her words. So we moved 50 miles away. And things were never the same. But the Lord took care of us. We found a place, little apartment. We lived there. We had this raggedy old car that broke down just about every day. Nothing on it worked properly. We really made out with AAA. They even told us they were going to cancel because we were abusing them too much. Seems like every other day we were being told. And then there were times when the bills came, it seemed to be more than what we were bringing home. And yet somehow, every month, the bills got paid. And there was always that little extra. I'm like, mathematically, it doesn't add up. But that's the Lord for you. If you put your trust in Him, He'll take care of you. Of course, I'm just biding time. That's why I'm up here. But I just wanted to share that with you. We have a long road ahead of us, brethren. None of us know how much longer it's going to take. Tomorrow? Next year? Some are saying, hey, December's coming, you know. The Mayans, they predicted the end. I personally think the Mayans just ran out of paper. That's why they didn't print any more calendars. But we shall see. And if it comes in December, I hope I'm ready. I like to think I'm ready. But we'll leave it in the Lord's hands. I'd just like to leave you with this one thought before I close. And that is, at least in my opinion, it is better to be divided by truth than to be united by truth.